Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, America, and good morning, world. Good morning, America, and good morning, world. I hope and pray everyone is well and blessed in their little piece of the planet, their space, in the big blue marble. Make the best of your current condition and situation wherever you are in this world, and just know that change is coming. Change is definitely on its way. This world is getting to be a better place each and every day. As we evolve in our intellectual capacity as a human race, we will evolve into a more peaceful and understanding civilization. That's just kind of how, you know, we are designed, you know, from the Creator. Today is March the 7th. We've made it into the month of March. I guess it would be the leprechaun month. I see a bunch of green clovers and colors and different things springing up all over the place, and the weather's getting better. And this is kind of a neat time of the year. You know, a lot of festivities and different, you know, things of that nature. Now, I don't necessarily personally celebrate different holidays and things of that nature, but you know, it does bring a positive excitement, if you will. And again, a lot of the things that we, you know, do in tradition are geared towards children, and, you know, making their moments happy and exciting. And and that's really, if we switch it around and change it and point it in that direction, you know, for the children, then, you know, it's kind of it's just a fun event, a fun day, happy days, days that I remember fondly, you know, as a child and stuff growing up. You know, I grew up in a time when, you know, even like with trick or treating, you know, Halloween time, you know, we'd go out and get our candy, and we didn't have to worry about, you know, any craziness in the candy or anything like that. And boy, we used to rack up, you know. I used to get a grocery bag full of it depends on how much I wanted, basically, you know, because, you know, you could go out and get a grocery bag full of candy. I mean, literally a paper grocery bag, which, you know, you don't see those a whole lot anymore, but just literally full of candy. I mean, just slap full. And if you felt like it, and, you know, time permit, it wasn't before 12 o'clock, you know, well, I think it was 11. I think it was 11 o'clock curfew in my hometown. You could go out and get you another, you know, start another bag. And we just had a blast. We had a lot of fun. And we toilet papered. We did used to do little honor things like toilet paper trees and houses and different things. And so we had a few shave cream, you know, events and soap, you know, writing on windows and different things like that. You know, we were just typical kids. You know, like I say, where I grew up and how I grew up, it was kind of like a Leave It to Beaver childhood. That's what explain it to people. And I'm so fortunate and blessed to have experienced, you know, that childhood. I also tell people that we didn't lock our doors and windows on our homes until somewhere, I believe it was around the mid-80s, I think, somewhere in that time frame, early to mid-80s. We had to start locking in, and it's because, you know, and here's another interesting thing that I was thinking about the other day as I moseyed about through my day. And you know, in terms of how time and mentality has changed, I guess we'll go in a cycle in terms of our intelligence and our civilization. But I can remember when, you know, we had zero homicides or zero killing for the whole year as a child, as a young person in our hometown. And I think when I left my hometown and went to another state, which was a shocker, a cultural shocker. I think I've explained this before. In terms of racism, I didn't really understand it or really grow up in it, you know, that I was aware of, you know, of course, that it existed, you know, in my hometown, and it existed in my home state, which is a red state, but a Republican state. But we just didn't see it where I grew up. You know, everybody, you know, was a melting pot of children, which was really neat. We had Native American, we had Asian, we had African, we had Russian, Italy, Italian. We had Little Italy, Little Italian, Little Russia, a German town. We just had a whole melting pot. Native Americans, you know, Hispanics, you know, it was really neat to see all these different cultures, you know, and be raised around all these. And it's helped me to be the person that I am today, you know, in terms of acceptance and understanding, you know, other cultures and other people. This is why I don't, when I encounter people and meet people, I meet them, you know, on the content of their character, as Dr. King would say, and embrace them in that way. And I've established some really, really good friendships across all spectrums of our culture, of our human existence, our human culture, our human evolution, because we are all truly one people. You know, there's different, you know, concepts and cultures and hues, you know, in terms of our skin color and things of that nature and our characteristics. But we are all derived of one people, one person, one creation. And that's a beautiful and blessed thing. And I hope I didn't get off track already. I easily do, but let me see. Let me think about where I was going in the beginning. And I don't remember. So anyhow, today's March the 7th, like I say, and I kind of got off on the little cultural things, the holidays and stuff like that. So anyhow, it's just how you do them, you know. It's just it's how you do them, and you know, you do them with a clear heart or a clean heart or a pure heart. God knows that. He sees that. And if it's just fun and it's for the children, I think we'll be okay in our celebration of different holidays and things of that nature. Now, true enough, the merchants make a lot of money. You know, I understand that. But that's okay, because what does that do? It fuels the American economy. It fuels the world economy, for that matter, because we're buying different things and trinkets and candies and toys and different things like that that literally come from around the world. So it's a contribution to the economy. You can also look at it in that manner as well. So there's nothing, you know, harmful about it. You know, so we can look at it and celebrate holidays in the right way and manner, even Christmas. You know, we certainly understand that that wasn't the birth date of Christ. You know, it has to do with the what they call the vernal equinox, and it's when the sun starts coming back towards the earth. You know, on or about that date, and you know, as the earth evolves or it rotates, and that's what the celebration is all about. Yeshua, you know, was born somewhere in a warmer month, somewhere around August-ish or September-ish or something like that, you know, when it's a warmer time. I mean, you know, you can imagine being in a manger and it would be, you know, 32 degrees or below and giving birth, you know, to a child in a manger would be a little bit difficult. And via historic accounts and things of that nature of research, you know, his birth wasn't around, you know, anywhere in December or the 25th. But that's what that's all about. You know, we'll get more heavily into that and that celebration in terms of, the sun coming back, you know, towards the earth and, you know, bringing forth spring and the, you know, the rebirth of plants and flowers and critters and all that kind of good stuff, you know, bears waking up, nature waking up, you know, and trees, their foliage, you know, becoming more full. And after fall, you know, all the leaves falling off, which equates to fall. I don't know if you've ever, you know, thought about that, but that's why it's named fall, because everything falls off the trees. It falls down, you know. And then spring, it springs up or springs to life, you know, comes back, you know. And, of course, like I say, the sun returning to the earth has, or being furthest away from the earth, you know, has everything to do with that. So anyhow, like I say, today is March the 7th. It's a blessed day, nice out, and we're going to jump right into the subject matter today. And I thank everybody for coming out and listening to our broadcast. I thank greatly Blog Talk Radio for allowing this forum and this medium to be reached. It can be instantaneously broadcast around the world. Somebody can literally, and I'm sure somebody is on the other side of the planet, you know, listening to my broadcast, and I thank them for it. You know, right now, it's a beautiful thing. You know, it's a wonderful thing about regarding the technology that we have today. But anyhow, I got an interesting show today. It's a political show. The name of the broadcast is Trump the Destroyer. Trump the Destroyer. Oh, my gosh. This guy is doing a fantastic job. Oh, my gosh. And you really don't see, the thing about it is you really don't know and see what this guy is up to. He's doing a masterful and a wonderful work, wonderful job in what he has set out to do. And that's simply to dismantle the Republican candidacy or dismantle the Republican Party for that matter. He is like a one-man destroyer, time bomb, you know, just And people don't see it. People don't know it. They don't see it. But you got to remember that Mr. Trump and the Clintons are very close, you know, and they're very good friends. There's a great deal of respect. Now, they're going to put on a show and say little barbed remarks, you know, towards one another and things of that nature. But when it all shakes down, you'll find it. And if you do the research and go back and look, you'll see that Donald Trump was a heavy, staunch Democrat and contributed a lot of money to the Clinton Foundation, to the Clinton campaign, and all of this stuff. And if you listen to him, listen to his undertone, you can hear the Democratic chant or charge in his message. Now, he's saying a bunch of crazy stuff about building a wall between, you know, the United States and Mexico. That's not going to happen. They'll say, you know, crazy things about, you know, immigration and different things like that, you know, but he's not really on that page. That's just, you know, to get people excited and on board, you know. And I seriously think that he's going to go to a certain point, and it may have started this past weekend, and get to a certain point and be like, hey, you know what? I don't really want to be the president of the United States. Why? Because it's not enough money, it's not enough interest in it for me, and things of that nature. Now, I'm not saying that a man can't get to a certain point, you know, and really change his mind and say, you know what, I'm a power freak, you know, which he is, you know, and I want to control, you know, the United States. I'm not saying that that couldn't happen. I just don't think it's probable in this particular instance and with this particular guy, Mr. Trump. I mean, he is exposed a lot in terms of the top three runners, what's left in the Republican candidacy for president. And that's a mess over there, folks. It's a fiasco. I mean, it's buffoonery. They're sitting up there talking about the size of a man's, you know, manhood
a man's hands, you know, and all of these different, you know, crazy remarks. It just, you know, it's just like children, like child's play, you know, up on that stage, you know, all of the, you know, top runners and stuff, with the exception of Mr. Kasich, you know, which I said a long time ago, Mr. Kasich has the best platform. He makes the most sense. He says a lot of the right things. But at the end of the day, what's it really, you know, what's it really evolving to? And I still strongly feel and believe that we are moving towards the one world order, the one world government. And by all indications of the fiasco that we see on with Mr. Trump, you know, dismantling the Republican candidacy, it's really almost a shoe-in or a walk-in for Hillary Clinton. You know, and, you know, quite frankly, she's the most presidential. She has a lot of positioning. And I just, you know, like I said, I'm apolitical, you know, in terms of politics. I lean, now, my conversation certainly may lean towards the Democrats, but, you know, what do you really want in terms of leadership for this great nation? Oh, and that's just another thing, too. You know, Rubio and Cruz and Trump, you know, they talk about make America great again. Again? When has America ever stopped being a great nation? I mean, just look around. Look at how we are and how diverse we are and how we, you know, how we have our freedoms and you know, come and go and children play and adults, you know, produce, you know, all this different kind of, you know, thing. And we're going to look at some statistics here, you know, in a few minutes, and it will validate and verify that America has never stopped being a great nation. Now, there we've had some dips and hard hits, you know, in the economy and in terms of jobs and things of that nature. And it wasn't under our current president, by the way. We're going to confirm that through statistics and numbers. But in this administration that we have on board now under Mr. Obama, things are really looking pretty good. You know, things are really looking pretty good. And all the numbers and different things of that would indicate that. So, and we're kind of, and I'm just going to jump to this right quick, you know, right here and now, since we're here in thought, that, and they say that they want to change the trajectory of a positive economy. Now, if you change the trajectory or bring forth change to something that's moving in the right direction, what do? You move it in the wrong direction, or you stifle it. We certainly don't want that, but like I said before, you know, conservatism is to conserve or to constrict, you know, to slow up, and liberal is to liberate, to free up, to let it go, let this horse go, you know, give the economy the reins and let her go, you know, that's what I say. And so far, she's marching at a pretty nice clip, pretty nice pace. Stock market is 17,000. We're going to get all into that. We're going to touch back on it. But I just want to throw that out there right now for time's sake. Now, Trump the Destroyer. Well, he's got everybody firing at him, all the, what they call the establishment, you know, Republicans, what they would be the hardcore conservatives, shooting at this guy. Now, think about that for a minute. Why are all the hardcore conservatives shooting at a conservative? You know, should be an establishment. He's a non-establishment Republican, you know. So what is non-establishment? He's not of the norm in the Republican way of doing things. So that would make him more moderate or more liberal, you know. And that's what I'm saying. You'll see that coming out from under his shell or under this, you know, this play or this illusion that he's putting out. When you look at the full spectrum. And why would they all be, you know, gunning at him, you know? And you know, of course, he is like something that can't be caged or he can't be contained. He says what he wants. He does. He's got money, plenty of money, and he's just showing out. he's someone out. It's amazing, and I'm amused by it. And I think he's doing a wonderful job in terms of clearing the path for democracy or for Hillary. Now, I told you a winning combination, and I think this is what's coming to pass, is I think that it would make sense for Hillary to add Bernie Sanders to be her vice president, because that would shore up, you know, a whole lot of votes, you know, delegates, superdelegates, and everything would be in the can. It'd just be so strong and so powerful as a one, and as we evolve to that one, you know, world and one government, one nation government. It'd be a very powerful movement. And, you know, the thing about it is, too, is that we have to stop this notion of fear and fear-mongering amongst our democratic leaders and the leaders of this great nation, simply because that's the only thing that keeps us divided, you know. They a lot of people just can't see an African-American, you know, president, Obama, like Barack Hussein Obama, you know, steer this great nation in a right direction. But he's done so, and the numbers will show, you know, that he's done a remarkable job in terms, even in the face of opposition. I can remember when Mitch McConnell, you know, came out as soon as Mr. Obama was elected president, said that we're going to do everything in our power to stop him. Now, what kind of nonsense is that? That you're going to, for political purpose and positioning and reason, you're going to stop a great nation like the United States from developing, evolving, you know, becoming strong as a nation. It's amazing, that mentality. And it has to be defeated. It has to be, you know, destroyed and put away once and for all. If we're truly going to be one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, how can we be one nation under God, indivisible? That means non-divided. And our first stop is division, Republican versus Democrat, Democrat versus Republican. That don't even make no sense. Maybe that's why, we think about it for a minute, maybe that's why, you know, other nations of the world kind of mock at us and laugh at us, because, you know, we live by this preamble and we announce it, but we don't abide by it. That's confusing, you know, right off the bat. You know, and who is the author of confusion? So we have to certainly think about that, and we, as we evolve as an intellectual or an intelligent, you know, human race, we have to think about those things. And if we evolve into that one world government, one world order, certainly we have to, you know, this nation would have to put it in play and put it in place. And we truly would put God at the headstone or the cornerstone of this evolution, and make this world a place, you know, where all humanity shares and survives and strives and grows and manifests. And we can certainly do it. And that's what our purpose and our calling is to do. The people that listen to this broadcast, the ears of influence that listen to this broadcast, you know, we have to steer this world, you know, in that trajectory, in that way, because this is the will of the Creator, not of man, but of our Creator. Man would much, a lot of people, a lot of, you know, dividers would have things divided, divisive, and fighting and squabbling amongst one another, and, you know, not evolving, but being stagnant with this barbaric mentality and way of life. But, you know, as we evolve in our intellect, you know, those things are put far behind and are in history books, and peace and harmony, love, joy, and all these great things that we're seeing to come, what we're seeing come to pass, will prevail. So anyhow, let me get back to my subject matter. Rush Limbaugh, man, I heard him on Fox News this weekend tearing down Donald Trump, totally against him. Anybody but Trump, we're gonna attack him. Blah blah blah. I'm like, wow. When Rush Limbaugh is against it, man, you might as well be a Democrat. Mitt Romney, he called Trump a phony. Stop Trump. They stop at any regard, at any, by any means necessary. Stop this guy. It's like they're going against a Democrat, because they are. I said long ago that Trump was sent to dismantle the Republican Party and dismantle the candidacy, and he's done a phenomenal job. Ted Cruz, he's not qualified. He's not qualified to be American president. First of all, Cruz and Rubio have no, diplomatic knowledge or anything like that in world diplomacy. One would say that Mr. Obama did not either coming into his presidency, but that's where you're wrong. If you look at his educational track, if you look at, who groomed him, like I said, he was picked at 8 years old and groomed to be the American president, getting all these. That's why when he stepped into office, it was kind of a a smooth transition from George W. Bush, to his presidency, because they knew each other long ago. They knew what was going on. And, when you look at Clinton and all that kind of stuff, they're all buddies. What's the guy that Eric Cantor took his place? I can't think of his name now. I'm not going to spend any time on it. But, he was a former speaker, House Speaker, and they all buddies. If you ever see them behind the scenes and catch little clips and stuff, they're laughing and joking and drinking and smoking cigars and calling each other by first name and all that kind of stuff. You're familiar with someone when you call them by first name and have that comfortable environment or comfortable setting. So, Mr. Trump, like I said, he's doing an excellent job dismantling the Republican Party. They're talking about Hillary, and I'm telling you, the cloud was removed. If you listen to what was said this weekend in terms of these emails and stuff, which she had no control over. Now, we just got confirmation this weekend from, I think it was a Fox News broadcast, if I'm not mistaken, but the cloud was just removed, because what they did was is they announced and named a person that was responsible for setting up her email server and all the permissions and restrictions and things of that nature. But they gave him immunity. The FBI gave him immunity from being given testimony in this particular case, or in this particular, I don't want to call it case, but it's a particular allegation in this particular procedure. And I said, I have 90 seconds, so love one another, take care of one another. It's the right thing to do. It's what God wants us to do, simply because God is love. But I'm going to keep talking because I think I have a few more minutes. But if they move the spotlight away from Hillary, which they're going to have to do because she just had no, she had no authority to originate the emails or anything like that, So she was basically what they call a pass-through. So she would get the information already classified, whether it be top, general, whatever the classification was, and then she'd read it and pass it on through, or she'd just read it and it would just sit there on her email server. So that really, relieves her responsibility, of any type of criminal activity, things of that nature, because there's watchdogs that govern email activity. You can best believe it's just not nothing, it's not something that's free flowing for her, being such a world figure. So, but then when you remove when you give the guy that created, set up the email server immunity, you don't have anybody to go, you know, to attack. You don't have anybody to really pin it on. Now, it should and would be pinned on that person that set up the email server, and perhaps on people that, you know, that originate the classification of the email, the classification of the email. But then that's a wide and broad, you know, blast, and you don't have anything there. You see, it would like be finding, you know, bits and pieces and needles and haystacks, you know, trying to find, you know, all the different origins, you know, of those emails and whoever, you know, initiated the or determined the classification of those emails. So they're getting ready to, you know, move this cloud from over her, and they should rightfully do so. I mean, if they had something on her, it came out by now, and it stuck from wherever that argument and that accusation comes from. It would have been a done deal. Okay, so anyhow, that's that. Trump skipped the CPAC. Folks, now, if this isn't the writing on the wall, I don't know what is. But he skipped CPAC this past weekend, and that lets you know exactly what his mindset and mentality, because this is a big, you know, hullabaloo, you know, of the Republican Party. This is the who's who, and they get to see the candidates and all that kind of good stuff. So for him to, you know, he could have been there. He got his own airplane. And so it's not like he couldn't have made it there. But he chose not to go there. He went to Kansas and I think some other place, Stump, or to, you know, to have his rallies and stuff like that. You know, he wants to go to the party. He wants to go to the party place. He didn't want to be in the midst of all of his Republican, quote-unquote, Republican buddies and colleagues and stuff, because he's like a like he sticks out like a sore thumb, you know, or, you know, a big old wart on a frog or something or whatever, you know, because, he, you know, he just doesn't fit in. He's not there, you know. So it couldn't be more clear. But I have a little article here from Red State, and you can look it up yourself. Just go to redstate.com, Trump skipping CPAC. It's what it all. Trump skips CPAC, shows he's a phony and a coward. That's the headline here. It says, mind how things change, and it's funny. Mr. Marco Rubio wasn't confirmed as Speaker of CPAC. He didn't cancel. He hadn't yet confirmed it at the time, and people went berserk. How could you not attend the most prestigious gathering of conservatives in an election year? But when Donald Trump decided to actually cancel out on CPAC, the reaction was much, much different, particularly from the Trump supporters. This is what they said. Oh, so what? CPAC is nothing but a gathering of establishment politicians. So Donald Trump hurt the feelings of a bunch of rhinos. Too bad. Are you serious? I mean, really? It really, you know, for me, it tells the tale of this individual, and for them to, you know, senselessly still, you know, follow behind the guy is kind of like, that's a mass confusion, a house of confusion, and you know what that's all about. Trump's excuse for not attending said he attended rallies in Kansas and Florida. What kind of nonsense is that? Ted Cruz and John Casey spoke yesterday. Marco Rubio will speak here there today. Why didn't the Trump attend? He said there's one particular reason, and he'll never admit to it, nor will the groupies. Something each person who speaks in CPAC has to do, and that's answer questions after they speak. They kind of do a grill down, if you will. And Donald just, you know, he's not really into that. He's not ready for that, you know. And you're gonna see him turn left of that, you know, more and more as time goes by. You know, Donald wasn't going to have the benefit of knowing what the questions were coming, nor would he be able to demand, as he did with Mika Brzezinski, to not make the questions, quote-unquote, too hard. Mr. Trump had a horrendous debate Thursday night, and it was, you know, he kind of like, and just think about, you know, his posturing in that particular debate, what changed? He just kind of sat there, you know, he kind of took a lot of blows and stuff. That's very un-Trump-like. But when you get down the path and stuff, you have to get destroyed. You have to allow yourself to get destroyed, you know, so that you can walk away, you see. Battered and beaten, you know, as it would be, you know. But the damage, you know, he's already won the battle, you know, that kind of thing, you know. So He's done what he's come to do. You know, he's put the doubt and question in the minds in terms of Rubio. He calls him Little Marco. That's going to stick. Ted Cruz being ineligible, that's going to stick. And Mr. Trump goes back to his, you know, big money life. And for the most part, all the people, you know, all the townspeople are none the wiser. But have moved in the right direction in terms of Hillary. He is now on every side of every position he has ever been asked about. He cannot articulate policy positions to save his life. He knows nothing, and he is an ignoramus. And this is from the Red. This is coming from the Red State article. Red State asked him about China and Mexico. And he charges they're devaluing our currency. Okay, so what? When asked to expand on such thing, he has nothing to say because he has no idea why. Now, folks, this is real. I mean, this is, you know, real politics. You can go there and read it for yourself. And you know, when you have such, you know, chaos amongst the leadership, being a house confused, and you have a house divided. On the Republican side, and you know what happens to a house divided, it never stands. You know, it falls. And like I said before, you can go ahead and read that. Talks about, and it says about making America great again, but he doesn't do it by uplifting people through an optimistic vision. He stirs anger and resentment amongst people and others. Trump is essentially like Obama, pitting groups of people against each other instead of inspiring people as a nation. Now, Mr. Obama was not a divider. You kind of flip the script on that particular thing because, you know, when you have somebody, you know, like a Mitch McConnell comes out the day of his, you know, election into presidency, says that we're going to do everything to stop him, that's a divider. That's literally divisive. That's a divisive conversation, a divisive statement right off the rip. You know, call it, say it how you want to, but that's that, you know. So leadership is all about inviting, you know, participation. What does Mr. Trump do? I mean, what does Mr. Obama do? True leaders are not afraid to have their views and opinions about a policy question. So Donald Trump was a leader, he claimed that he would have been a CPAC. Mr. Obama, you know, invites, you know, the right to come and be a part of things, but they want to stop everything. They want to, you know, say no to this. And I mean, just look at the Supreme Court, you know, situation. You know, they don't want to, you know, have a hearing. You know, even have a hearing based upon his appointment, you know, for that position. I mean, how divisive can you be? You know, that stops the economy. That stops the nation. You know, that is a frayed, just like a hair, you know, hair that has split ends. You know, it doesn't grow. You know, so it's the same logic, same principle there. You know, who does that? Who calls that shot? You know, but I thank God that it's being dealt with and removed and being taken out, you know, very tactfully, very strategically. And we will be one nation under God, not divided, with liberty, with freedom, and justice for all people in this great nation. Was great, is great, will be great. That's all it is to it. That's why we're here, to bring forth this message of greatness. And that's it. Like I said, let me see if I got time. Bureau of Statistical Labor. If you look at, go to data.biz.gov, you can look at the statistics for yourself. And it gives a nice little download here, a spreadsheet from the year 2006 to 2016. So that's a nice little span there, 10-year span. Now, 2006, in January, the first 2006, they added 278,000 jobs. 2007, 240. 2008, only 19,000 jobs. And then you can see right here in 2008 when Mr. Obama came in. Well, you can see it in the last year of Mr. Bush's presidency, where the negative numbers start to pop in. Now, like I say, he was there by design. He had a particular purpose and a reasoning for that. But here's the conserve or the constriction here from 2006. You'll see these little numbers and stuff, 23, 4,000 in October to that. And you can see the negatives start popping in, negative 86,000, negative 165. All of the negative 769 November 2008. This is when Mr. Obama came in and kind of started putting the reins on things. 2009, negative 791,000. All of these negative numbers here, folks, these are people losing jobs. It's mind-boggling. But then you can see here when Mr. Obama starts to rein things in and get the pony under control, if you will, and getting bit in the right position. 2011, positive numbers. 2013, all positive numbers. 2014, all positive numbers. 15, all positive numbers. 16 and 17, 242,000 February, last month, 242,000 jobs. These are positive directions. It's a positive economy, positive direction. See, the numbers don't lie. It's all right here. You can say what you want, but when you look at the numbers, it put forth facts and it confirms your conversation. It validates your conversation and what you got going on here. So you can see it right there. OPEC wants to get the numbers at $50 a barrel. That indicates another strong economy. I don't see why it needs to be $50 a barrel. Well, I do because they want to make money and stuff over there in the Middle East and things of that nature. And they can do a lot of things. There's a lot of stuff going on over there that I know about. That a lot of people don't know about. But in order for it to land and settle at $50 a barrel, and that's pretty reasonable to tell you the truth. It's a heck of a lot better than $100 a barrel. We can, digest that in the economy, and it kind of helps them, help us, help them type of thing. Win, win, win. We'll make the adjustment for that, so that's okay. We should go forward with that. Peyton retires a winner. Peyton Manning retires a winner. He said yesterday that he's going to retire. I'm so glad he's chosen to do that. Go out a winner. Go out healthy. Live a long and productive life. God bless you and your family. The Mannings have contributed so much, to the NFL, to American football. I'm not saying there may be some little Paytons in the making, Mannings in the making that can carry on that legacy, and I would gladly and openly welcome that. Now, I wanted Carolina. I was looking at, Cam Newton to win one, to win his first and stuff. He's young. He'll win two or three of them before he gets out of there, at least one or two. But I was glad just really happy for Peyton because I've watched him over the years, and he's been just I love football. I love American football and golf, of course. But he's contributed so much. He deserves, all the accolades and everything that he receives. And that Budweiser, man, go have that Budweiser, buddy, and enjoy it, So I don't know if that was a plug, but, hey, Bud's all right. I like Bud Light, too, myself. But anyhow, that's my broadcast for today. Love everyone and take care of one another. It's the right thing to do. It's what God wants us to do. Why? Simply because God is love. Till the next broadcast, take care for now, and so long.